I don't even think you can even hum it. Well,
you mean me personally?
Let's be frank. You can't hum it. Welcome to episode 379 of the On Taking Pictures program. Man, we're getting up to 400.
Is it 379?
Yeah, it was 378, the last one. I'm looking at it right now.
Wow.
Yeah, 379.
400.
You know, when you
something special for 400.
When you started this thing, you didn't think you'd make it to 379, did you?
No.
Now look at you.
We have to do something special for 400 and something even more special for episode 420.
Woo! Bill gets high for the first time.
So can we start with a little bit of news?
Sure.
Because it's kind of a bummer. I mean, okay, so a bunch of new Macs, Apple announced. Oh,
that's the bummer. That's the news? Okay.
Well, this tech news. You know, finally, we get a new Mac Mini. It's not an M5, it's an M6.
Yep.
But it also comes in at $899 for 16 gig 256 in 2026.
I mean,
now keep in mind, kids, that the M4, they bumped up the price of the M4 $200. So it was $799. And now the M6, which is ostensibly to replace the M4, gets another price bump. So for those of you paying attention, that's a $300 price jump in less than a year and a half.
Yeah. Almost all of it, I'm sure, due to RAM and SSDs.
But they could have at least, like they did with some of the other products, they didn't even increase the base storage to 512.
I think because they don't have storage. I think they just don't have the chips.
Well, yeah. You can get it as an option.
Sure, but then you're selling. I'm just saying that I don't know that they have enough to even do that across the board. I mean, it is crazy how little RAM and storage chips there are right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I mean, like, sure, multi-trillion dollar company, you know, has to raise prices because their margins went smaller. Boo hoo.
Here's where I'm going to call bullshit, though.
Okay.
They didn't increase the price of adding additional storage. So it's still $200 to go from 16 to 24, just like it was.
Yeah.
So that leads me to, you know, a conclusion that, we already know that Apple's RAM prices have always been massively inflated.
Oh, sure. Well, that's definitely true.
And their storage prices.
Yeah.
But it's like you just raised the price $200 on your entry level, highest selling device.
I may be wrong. I'm usually the cynic here, but just for a moment, I'm going to be the non-cynic and say, I bet you there are people at Apple who are thinking, oh, crap. Like this sucks that we have to raise the price because we will actually sell a lot less of these.
Well, here's my thought. If you're going to, okay, don't penalize the people who are scraping together money to get the low-end entry-level device. Don't raise the price
of the
Neo.
Screw the people like Bill who want to buy a high-end one.
Well, I mean, If you're using it, ostensibly, if you're using it professionally, if you're getting a pro level device, a studio, you know, one of the pro phones, okay, fine. Amortize it over those. But for people coming in, you're going to take your best selling laptop ever, the Neo. And part of the reason that it did sell so well is because it came in at $599. So now you're going to throw a $100 premium on that. The Mac Mini, one of the top selling Macs, if not the top selling Mac in the line.
Right.
Again, partially because of price, maybe a big part of it because of price. You're going to tack on three, not one, not two, but $300 on this entry level machine. Come on.
I really think that it's the RAM. RAM went from $100 for 16 gigs to $600 for 16 gigs in the last year. 6X.
I get it.
I mean, it's just,
I get it.
And they can't even get them because it's not like, oh, they cost a lot of money. It's like they are, all these companies are fighting to get the, you know.
But, you know, you're expecting, they are expecting consumers to make up the cost when they're keeping their margins at, but still between, they're maintaining between a 40 and 50% margin.
Sure.
So come on, Apple, you're a $5 trillion company. take a knee.
Take a lower.
And that's not their job.
Their job is to make money.
I know. It's capitalism.
I think this is the problem with people's imagination, their idea of Apple in their head, is that they still think of Apple, and it was wrong to begin with, but let's just say they still think of Apple as the rebels in the garage, think different, blah, blah, blah. They are one of, if not the largest corporation in the world most of the time. Yeah.
And you're not thinking different
by buying Apple. You are now the big head on the screen in the IBM commercial, you know, in the mobile space,
at least. I think that torch has been passed to nothing. Nothing, the company, not nothing like nothing.
Oh, sure. Okay.
The nothing phones, the nothing headphones, the earbuds, like they're doing great design. They're doing great product.
Yeah. But how many people are buying these things?
Well, that's the thing, right? They're still sneaking in sort of under the radar in terms of pricing. They're not charging, you know, I mean, the iPhone Fold, the Ultra, this is another thing. Ultra is supposed to be the pinnacle of performance. And the new folding iPhone is not going to be the pinnacle of performance, yet it's still getting the Ultra branding.
Well, we don't know that it's getting the Ultra branding. Internally, it was, but we don't know until.
Well, they're not going to call it the iPhone Fold. I mean, that's the iPhone Crease.
My thing is that I used to be emotionally connected to a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And now I just say, you know what? They make a good tool that lets me do the things I want to do.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a big jump in price. Yep. It's still massively less than what they were selling for in the 80s and 90s.
Well, that's the thing. The original Mac nowadays with inflation was $10,000.
Yeah.
And you're complaining about the Mac Mini at $899 that is $4 billion more powerful, you know.
I'm complaining about a $300 price jump.
Sure.
$300 price jump over a generation.
A 50% increase over a generation, which I honestly think has as much to do with the component pricing.
Yeah.
Even the cost of the new 2-nanometer chips, they have to get through TSMC. So now they have to pay TSMC more to get access to the new thing. Like everything multiplies.
When the irony is that it's Apple who effectively built TSMC's reputation now.
Sure. Yeah. Well,
right.
Now TSA, the shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah. They're no longer, you know, the only company in the game.
Here you go. While we're on this topic, they also put out the new Mac Studio.
Yeah.
Which I had actually been waiting for because I'm still using an M1 Max fully loaded. So it's got 64 gigs of RAM, 2 terabytes. It's like the top end M1 Max 14-inch laptop that I paid, which I think I paid $3,900, something like that.
What is it now? Same configuration.
Same configuration now. If I bought it, is $4,699. So it's up $1,000. And that's so
percentage
same,
wise. What is that relative to the non studio version?
Wait, hold on a second. Well, here's the thing. I'm talking about the laptop. So the laptop.
Right. Okay.
My old laptop, I think, was like $3,600. The new one's like $4,700. But here's the thing. I went and I just spec'd out a studio with a Max chip with 64 gigs of RAM with 2 terabytes, and it's $3,919. So for $800 to make it a laptop, I thought the differential would be more than that. You know what I mean? For $800, I'll just buy the laptop. Like for that difference, if I was going to get a new one, you know, I was thinking if I could get the studio for cheap, I'd get that, have that be my main machine. I'd keep the laptop for when I needed to travel or work somewhere, you know, but I kind of like having everything all on one, but the difference between the two, it's like basically $800 gets you a screen, a battery backup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, well,
I think I'll still get the Mini. Because I'm still working on an M1, a base model M1, non-Max, non-Pro, 16/256 configuration.
Yep.
And interestingly, on the education store, you do get the $100 off. So it's $799 on the education store rather than $899, but you don't get the gift card that comes with the other devices.
Do you, do you have access to education pricing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the kid is in school. So yeah.
Smart.
So I could save $100 on that, which is, it's a little, you know, less, a little less bitter. I wonder, is this release and this pricing strategy, is this Tim Cook's last bid or is this John Ternus's first bid?
I think this is just the reality of the market. I mean, you can complain about their price increases, but go look at Dell and ThinkPads and all the rest of it. Like all the prices have gone up.
I know.
Amazon raised the prices of everything like 60% this week, including Kindles.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah. I'm onto something.
I don't know what I was going to say. I got a new Supernote Manta.
Oh, what is a Supernote Manta?
It's like a Kindle, but it's a tablet, right? Look up Supernote Manta.
Looking at it. Yep.
10.3. Beautiful screen. Well, here's the thing. So they sent me one. They sent me one, end of last year.
Okay.
Right. And it started getting this weird discoloration staining on the case. Well, they determined that it was a result of the kind of the paint process that they used and the type of paint that they were using.
Okay.
And they said, hey, if it's an issue, get in touch with us. 2-year warranty, we'll send you another one.
So did you?
I reached out to Mao at Supernote and told him what was going on, sent him pictures. He's like, yeah, we'll send you another one. So not only did they send me the first one to review, which I'm grateful for, but they sent me a replacement. It arrived the other day. And I got to tell you, this device is keeping me from buying an iPad because it is, I love this device. I love it.
It's e-ink, right?
Yeah, it's e-ink. I use it every day. It is one of the, other than carrying my phone around, which I tend to leave more, I use it every day. I love it. I actually think that the focused feature set is its greatest strength because if I sit down with it, I know I'm doing one of two things, reading or writing, because that's all it does.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. You're like, you know, we've discussed before. What the hell's buzzing? Hold on a minute. Sorry about that. I didn't want them buzzing for the next 10 minutes.
How do you even understand? It sounds like the drivers on the metro.
What you hear is delivery or UPS, Amazon, FedEx. That's all you ever hear. And you know what? To get into a building in New York City, all you got to do is buzz some things and go, delivery.
Yeah, and then they'll let you
like in the movies, it actually is true.
You could be a serial killer and just...
You know, I've had... little aside, I went to, I bought a 4-pack of those, air tags.
Oh yeah. 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 Never used one. Yeah. But I know what you mean.
Cause we were thinking, oh, we'll stick them in our travel bags and you know, things just so if we ever have to check them and they get lost, like we know where they are, blah, 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 blah. I'll put one of my photo bags or something, you know, so whatever, camera bags, that kind of thing. So we got a 4-pack because they were on sale on Amazon the other day. And I got them yesterday and I cracked it open. I went in to find mine and it all worked fine, whatever. I stuck it in my bag. But I was looking at all the different stuff I had listed in my Find My devices. And I had my laptop and I had my watch and I had my AirPods and I had my phone, blah, blah, you know, whatever. But it had like, you know, Bill's MacBook Air :2 or whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever right, it was right, like. And right. I'm like, the hell MacBook Air is that, you know? And I realized that it had all these devices from the last 15 years that I no longer even know.
That you've never removed from your account.
Yeah. And so, and then I looked down and the same was true of my wife and my mother's on our family account. So it was same as true of her. And so there were all these things on there that I was like, man, we got to get rid of that nonsense, you know? So I started cleaning it all out and it made me realize that I've owned three iPads in my life, two of which I still own, but like one's on the rower to watch TV and is a really old one with a cracked screen that I use as like my stereo source.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've got a USB, USB to SPDIF adapter hooked up to the iPad. So I go into a better DAC in my CD player. And I use that. So I just use it as like my head unit. But like I never pick up an iPad. I never sit down with one. I don't know what they're for. I don't understand why people like them. Like, I either want my phone, a little thing, or I want a big screen on a computer. I don't want the thing in the middle. And it's funny because, like, some people love the thing in the middle and they don't want a phone. They don't want a computer. They just want the iPad. I find it incredibly frustrating to do anything on an iPad. Like, I watch TV on an iPad. That's the only thing I do on an iPad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I waffled. I was going to get one. I waffled back and forth. But the more I started using this Manta and the writing experience, because I have tried to write on an iPad for years and I hate it.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's awful. And I don't care about the screen protectors and, oh, you got to get this and you got to get this tip.
You texturize.
And
you gotta, blah, blah.
Yeah. No, it all sucks. It all sucks.
But you actually writing with your hand.
I do.
If I write a check, my hand is cramping.
No, I love it. I write longhand and for the last several months, I've started writing in cursive again.
And you can buy like different metal pens for this thing if you want to.
Yeah. Ceramic nib. It never needs replacing. It doesn't need charging. It is. I can't say enough about it.
Now, has the price gone up on this thing? Because right now they're $505.
It's $505, but if you add the case and the pen, I think the 505. I think that's just the device.
Yeah, from 505. But I guess is it more expensive than it was?
I don't think so. I think they've kept it pretty close. If I were gonna buy another tablet, the next one I would think about getting is the Books Note Air 5C. It adds color, still e-ink.
Okay.
So, and the way they've done it, you get 300 DPI on the monochrome side, you get 150 DPI on the color side. It's a little more flexible in that it's running Android 15, so you get access to the Play Store and can run multiple apps and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it's almost, in some ways though, that's not, it's exactly what you don't want, right? Is more stuff.
Yeah, the only app that I really wish that the Manta could run natively, and you can sideload it, but that's not really the same thing, is Libby for reading.
Oh,
because
sure.
some titles you still can't send to Kindle, and the Kindle app on it is kind of clunky, but that's not their fault, that's Kindle's fault.
I look at all these things. I mean, they're all very cool. I don't work that way, you know?
Yeah.
And how do all your paper notebooks feel about you cheating on them with this digital thing?
they do nothing but side-eye me all day long.
Do you get calls from the other notebook manufacturers?
I find little cryptic post-it notes all over the place. And I'm like, I didn't write this. You know you miss us.
Yeah.
You'll be back.
It's like a page torn out of the notebook. You're like, how the hell did that happen? Like,
yeah. What's going on here?
You're matching the edge of the rip. You know, you're in the
yeah. It's just a little drawing of like a hangman's noose.
Oh man, that's so good.
Oh, so yeah. Anyway, there you go.
So some sad stuff happened this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it seems like we're losing people right and left.
Seems like it. Big one today.
Yeah. Well, it was a couple of days ago, I think, but, Jay Mazel died. He was 94 or something like that.
Something like that.
God, yeah. I remember going to his 80th birthday.
Was this at the Bowery Building? At his house?
They had a cake for him at Soho Photo. One night, I think, was I just there? Or was I giving a talk that night? But Jay was there and they had a cake for him. And that was it was 80. So that must have been, 2011 or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
It was actually the one thing I was doing when I was waiting to talk to you is I was pulling up pictures that I took at the bank building.
Hmm.
That I haven't looked at in a long time. And, I'll send you some pictures. So you can see them and I'll figure out a way to put them in the thing.
For those of you who don't know, Jay was, you can use the word icon. He was an iconic photographer, both for the photos that he took and just for his position within the photographic community. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think he was kept as like one of the guys in the industry that everyone look up to, even though I think your average person would know the cover of Kind of Blue, right? You know,
which is one of the Miles Davis records. Yeah.
I think that
fiercely protective of that piece of work,
which, you know, that's his right and job to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he, it's funny because, you know, you look up his Wikipedia entry and it's like, you know, yes, he's in the Art Directors Club Hall of Fame. He's in the ASMP. He's in this. He's got the awards from the Infinity Award from the International Center of Photography. And then he went to Cooper Union. He went to Yale, became a photographer in 1954. Some of his notable images, blah, 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 Kind of Blue. And then the rest of the thing is about the fight he had with Andy Bao over the Kind of Blue album cover picture and the bank, a whole long paragraph on him buying the bank building and it costing a lot of money. And then he died.
Right. Very little about his actual contributions to photography.
Yeah. Right. It's, which is weird. Jay, cause I know some people who know him pretty well, and he would, even in the days of digital, cause he used to shoot a lot of films. So he used to shoot all kinds of stuff that, you know, for example, I'm going to put a picture in the thing with Jeffrey here. And I'm going to see if what it says on this box brings any memories to him.
You see. Oh, Sports Illustrated. Okay. So the Sports Illustrated, Elle McPherson, 1988 top selects, Maine, small town aerials, Fannie Mae selects, Railroad Bridge, Heinz Job, Itasca.
I remember the pictures of Elle McPherson in the Sports Illustrated Institute, you know, in 1988, that would have been when I was 12 years old. I remember those pictures and they are in, those are the original negatives or slides probably. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah,
he had everything really meticulously organized. Like here's a box that was thinking. So he owned this bank building. This is like one of the big famous things about Jay Mizell is he owned this giant bank building that was like 13 floors on the Bowery. And so you would go to visit Jay. It's the old Germania bank building. It was built in 1898. It was 35,000 square feet. It was 72 rooms over 6 floors. And he bought the building in 1966 for $102,000.
$300,000 a year to maintain it, including heat and taxes.
Well, see, that's the thing that I was going to bring up is that when you were there. So people are just like, oh, he sold it for $30 million or whatever it is. And it's like, $50 million. Yeah, but how much did he spend over the 50 years just owning it?
Yeah. You have to achieve a certain level of success in whatever
endeavor. Be able to afford spending $300,000 a year just to maintain your house.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, it was an old bank building, and in the basement, he had his archives in the actual vault.
Wow.
So you would go, and the vault was huge. I'm sending Jeffrey some pictures. This is the inside of the vault, the one I just sent you now.
Holy cow. Okay. So that's probably, I'm going to say maybe 15 feet deep. And from our vantage point, maybe twice that. So maybe 15 by 30 feet.
Yeah. Right. It was basically my apartment, but it was
15, 20 by 30 by 40, maybe.
Yeah.
Wow. And there is floor to ceiling stacked with boxes, flat files and boxes of negatives.
And everywhere in his place, there were these piles of dead slides. I'm sending you a picture. This is a metal trash can full of dead slides that he didn't want anymore. Piles of them.
Who is in that photo? Is that, it looks like Vincent Versace taking the photo.
It's Randy Duchesne taking the photo. And this,
oh, is it?
And this guy was one of Jay's assistants at the time. I don't remember his name. But like there were bags and bags and bags of picture.
And every one stamped on the back, copyright Jay Mizell, all rights reserved.
Yep. And so, and this was the stuff he was trashing, right? So there were actual, like behind other slats, there were like clear plastic bags full of slides that were there and sort of, I don't know, waiting for destruction. I don't know what the plan was with them. I mean, the flat file thing, like I showed you the zoomed up one, but I mean, talk about organization. Look at the system he had for.
Oh, it's crazy.
I mean, I don't even understand how you would find anything in this. I mean, the whole physical photos, trying to keep track of all that stuff is insane to me.
And look at the scaffolding on the ceiling that contains prints stacked on top.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. I didn't notice that. Like, he built it up out of there.
Wow.
But see, that's just the vault. There was a whole floor that had big prints that people could buy, like a sort of a sales room.
Right.
Actually, there were two floors of that. There was the ground floor and this next floor up. But then there was like the living floors. And then there was all kinds of floors full of rooms. And this is going to make you go nuts. Full of rooms like this.
Oh, look at that flat file set. Wow.
Look at what I'm sending you, just sent you.
Okay. Oh, I've never seen this. Look at this. This is all kinds of tools.
And it is like, imagine.
Is this for like building framing?
No.
They do all the framing in house? What is this
they
for?
Maybe, but Jeffrey, look through the, see how you see room to room to room to room?
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of them was filled like this.
Oh my God.
He was the, I'm gonna show you, like, so on the table, there was like tables that looked like this. Look at this. Look at the stuff on these tables. They look like he was knolling stuff on purpose or by accident. I don't know how his brain worked. But look at this.
This is like a whole furniture workshop. Look at these templates of. Oh my gosh.
How, and just the amount of stuff. 35,000 square feet. When he sold the building, I heard that he went from 35,000 square feet down to 10,000 square feet and had to get storage.
Wow.
Because of all the stuff that he had. Now,
wow.
But the thing is that it's $300,000 maintaining it.
Can you include a couple of these in the
I'll figure out how to do that. I'll do that. I'll put it in the on the WordPress thing.
Yeah, they'll do it in the post. Yeah. These are fantastic. You really do get an idea of scale and scope from these photographs.
And
we're just scratching.
But look at the ceiling. I mean, it's all falling apart.
Look at that.
Because it's too much to maintain, right? It's impossible.
Yeah.
But there was one thing that I saw while I was there. At one point, I went to use the bathroom. I went to the end of the hall, and I went into the bathroom. And by the way, Jay was very gracious. I was there with Randy. We were hanging out. I think Randy was interviewing him for something, and I was just walking around taking pictures. He was cool with it. But I go into the bathroom, and I pee or wash my hands, and I look up, and this is what I see.
A mirror.
And I can't imagine that this isn't like the perfect picture of this man's mind.
Look at that. Okay. So may I attempt to describe?
Sure.
So we're seeing the top of what looks like a massive marble sink with almost like a piece of cornice or crown molding, also out of marble, white marble. Behind it, slightly out of focus, is that same kind of peeling paint, cracking texture on the wall that was on the ceiling, but stacked precisely from the mind of, like, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Kevin Spacey's character in Seven, right?
Yeah.
With all the notebooks. There are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. 32 wafer thin pieces of soap, bar soap, stacked in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stacks.
You guys know when you like, you have a bar of soap and you wear it down to where it's just sort of like a pebble of what it once was.
Yeah. You don't want to use it because it'll just fold in half if you get it wet.
So he kept them.
He kept them. And it looks like they are just meticulously stacked. Oh my God.
And this wasn't his main bathroom. This was just like a bathroom on one of the other floors.
Oh man. This is, you know what? And just as a photograph, I got to tell you, I love this photograph.
I kind of like it too. Yeah.
I do. I love it. I would print and frame this photograph. So if you want to send me a full res one.
All right.
I'll print it out.
Isn't it fascinating though?
I'll come up and get it. That's what we'll do.
Hey, I'm waiting.
Yeah.
But
fascinating insight into.
It's funny. It's like I had all these other pictures of him, including, and I'll send you here. I was there while they were talking, and I took a picture of Jay.
But honest to God, Bill, this tells you more about Jay than a portrait could.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. Yeah.
This gives you an insight into his character and his thought process in a way that I don't know you could capture in a portrait of him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorite pictures of him. And yeah, this is one of my favorite pictures of yours, full stop.
Yeah,
I love this.
It's
photograph.
Just Jay in like a what is that called? What
kind repose?
Of, oh yes, well yes. I just meant the what kind of hoodie? A fleece hoodie.
Yeah, like a fleece, not even a hoodie, just like a little fleece jacket, zip hands in pocket.
Yeah. By the way, it was a fleece. This was February.
You know what he looks like? You know who he looks like? He looks like Marlon Brando.
Yeah, he does a little bit. Yeah. But it was February, and they keep the heat way down because it costs so damn much to you know, pay for it.
Yeah, this is a terrific photograph.
So, you know, I just, that picture of the soap, though.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
It's just, there's something about it makes me go, oh, yeah.
It is so mundane, but is so revealing at the same time. I mean, that's an Eggleston shot. That's a terrific picture.
And I was just sitting there washing my hands, and I look up and I was like, oh man, that's
thanks universe.
That's the stuff right there. I mean, yeah. And again, that's not my world. Taking that kind of picture is not normally my thing.
Yeah.
But man, I just, yeah.
And you just took the one. So you were channeling. You know, you may not know that. Well, you do, but listeners, you may not know this. Eggleston doesn't take more than one picture at a setup or a scene. He takes one and moves on. That's it. There's no, he's not Magnum. He's not working a scene or working a subject or looking for the, he takes one.
He goes, sees the thing. He takes a picture. He keeps going because he felt like if he took more than one of them, he would be arguing with himself over which one is the right one. So he just takes one.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
You know, it's interesting going to, if you go to Jay's site, if you go to jmazel.com,
yeah.
And you go to, I think, is it favorites? Where is it? Where did it go? I just had the thing here. Yeah. Favorites number 6. Is this the one? Yeah. Okay. So, if you go to collections favorites here, I'll send you a link and I'll put this in the show notes. I mean, the thing about
this, they've really redone this in the last couple of years. This looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Favorites number 6. Here we go.
But Jay's pictures, if you click through these, even his digital stuff.
Yeah. That's a classic. First one with the ropes.
Yeah. And the guy coming out of the cab.
Oh, the guy in the cab.
Look classic. At the next one. Look at the tones of the snow in the next one with the tree.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing about Jay Mazel. It wasn't about like him being the absolute. He wasn't like the guy who you look at his picture and you absolutely know instantly that it's a Jay Mazel photo. At least I don't think so. But you look at his pictures and you were like, man, this guy. I mean, just so many different ways of looking at things.
Yeah, he was an incredible observer / noticer of things.
Yes,
incredible.
And apparently, I hear that he. Shot it when he was shooting digital, he used to shoot Nikon, right? At least up in, as far as I knew. But he would just shoot it 1600 all the time.
He
was like, couldn't be bothered with like not shooting 1600. And all of his assistants and people who would work on his pictures would be like, can you please just lower your ISO, you know? And he would shoot at 1600 and he'd shoot JPEG and RAW. But he just want to use the JPEG. And they're like, no, shoot the RAW. We'll make the shot. And he's like, no, I want the RAW to look exactly like the JPEG out of the camera.
Yeah. We had one interaction with him. And this was when Faded and Blurred was still a thing. And I was still teaching at the school. We did a profile on him and you know, used a couple photographs in the profile, et cetera. And his assistant... At the time, one of his assistants reached out and said, hey, you got the copyright or something was in. They were really cool about it. They're like, just, we love the piece. Just correct this. This is wrong. Other than that, you're good.
What was incorrect?
Like the attribution on one or two of the photos was wrong. I don't know if it was a date or if it was I don't remember now. This was, you know, 15 years ago, 16 years ago, 18 years ago, something like that. But they were really cool about it. He just said, you know, just correct this. And and you're good to go. Same with Lee Miller. Her estate reached out to us and said, you can't use these three photographs because we don't own the copyright on them anymore. Here's a selection. Choose another three from these and you can use them however you want.
Yeah.
No problem.
Man, you go in the JMazel site and you look at the collections. There are so many pictures on here.
It's amazing.
It's like unbelievable amounts of pictures.
This is, I mean, if you want to learn
how many pictures you can take in 95 years.
Yeah, right. No, if you want to learn about composition, about intent, about purpose, about noticing, this is a effing masterclass, his website.
Yeah, there's unbelievable amounts of stuff here.
Yeah.
And I just, he just did so much. And it's like, it's he really loved photography. I remember seeing a picture of him. There was like one of those water towers at the top of his building. And there's a picture of him hanging off the water tower to take a picture. Let's see if it exists anywhere.
But while you're looking for that, we have to share the one of the stories that's become lore. Apparently, Jay was giving a portfolio review, and fella was presenting his portfolio and asked Jay, how do I take more interesting photos? And apparently the story goes, without missing a beat, Jay just looked at him and said, become a more interesting person, and slid his portfolio back to him.
Whew. That's a rip. Yeah, right. Here, I found the picture.
Well, what is the thing with the lens? When you dropped the lens, and he what did he tell you?
Oh, I don't remember this.
Something like, hey, Wadman, you really are an asshole, or something like that.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I had the lens on the edge of the table.
Yeah. At his house.
It was when I was taking those pictures. It was that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like one of them, I bumped it and it slid off. Yeah. And he was like, wow, you really are an asshole.
You managed to catch it or something. It didn't hit the floor, but then he kind of called
it out. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Good callback. I found the picture of him.
Oh yeah, look at
the water tower.
Look at that.
So he's got a harness on.
This is like the McNally photo at the top of the Empire State. Mm-hmm. You know, where the guy changing the bulb. Wow, look at that.
See, the thing is, I don't like heights.
I wonder who took this. Do you have any sense of who took
it? It was in a magazine here. Let's see. John Longard. Took it, who we've used as our photographer of the week before.
Yeah.
This was in an article about John Longard, I guess. Yeah. Oh, this is that weird book. Remember John Longard made the book about the different photographers? And so he took a picture of Brassai's eye.
I wonder if that's still in print.
I'm going to put it here. It's called the Silver Age.
Something like
Photography
that.
Silver Age.
Yeah. And it's got these photographers holding one of their more famous prints.
No. This is just a picture. Is that not that one? Pictures of them. That's a different thing. I'll send you a link to this guy. We talked about this book a million years ago, probably 420 episodes ago.
Right. I remember this one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Versailles eye. Look at that. What a great picture.
Yeah.
That's it. You know what? This was one of the, I think it was one of the inspirations for Keatley. That photograph that he took of Annie Leibovitz.
Sure.
Her hand over her face.
I think it goes all the way back to episode 16. I think we talked about John Longard. So it's literally, he was our photographer of the week on the 16th episode. So you can go back to August 2012 for that one, kids.
Wow.
yeah. See? We got memories like steel traps, except for me getting yelled at by JMazel. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I should put that on my business card, you know, like portrait photographer. This was once called an asshole by
iconic photographer JMazel.
Jay.
You know, I think one of the things that Jay's work, is so great for, and there are a number of people I would put, you know, Stephen Shore in this category and you know, Fred Herzog and even Saul Leiter.
Yeah.
They captured a time and the feel of a time that we will never, ever, ever see again.
Yeah. But I mean, aren't we doing that too? Aren't we all always doing that?
I think so. Yeah, to a degree. Things were just cooler back then. Things were...
Lots of people say we think that, but the reality is that the cooler that it becomes cool with age.
Maybe. I've been reading a lot lately about how the world has lost its color in terms of automobiles, fashion, architecture, that we have slowly drifted to this neutral palette of monochromes and analogous colors rather than, even back in the 80s and 90s, bright colors in terms of clothing and cars.
Yes, that's totally. I think that's totally true.
Signage, you know, everything has gone to a sans serif because kids don't know how to read cursive.
Apparently, I have a copy of this John Lohengard book.
Do you?
Yeah. Buying new, guess how much they cost?
I don't know. You're still in the shrink wrap because you never open things?
Maybe, actually. Which, if it was, I'd be very happy because you know what they go for new?
$1,000.
$1,976.
Yeah.
Used, wow. There's one available for $20. So
there you go.
Somebody wants to buy one, buy it from Half Price Books before they know what they have.
Half Price Books or Abe Books is another good source.
Yeah.
Wait, Half Price Books. Wait, hold on.
I just happened to look on Amazon and that's what it's listed for.
What is it? J-O-H-N...
L-O-E-N-G-A-R-D.
John Lohengard.
What do you think about... Some people would say that a book like this is John Lohengard's legacy. Jay's legacy are the pictures we've been talking about and the location he had.
Also books. I mean, Jay's got a bunch of books.
Sure. But can you create a legacy or does it create itself?
I think it creates itself because it's not up to you to decide what is important, iconic, et cetera. You know, you can't set out to go, oh, I'm going to go take an iconic street photo, or I'm going to create an iconic body of work. That can be your intent.
But use media to manipulate your image in such that you are more than one person? You know what I mean? I feel like there's a lot of people who, yes, they're taking good pictures, but they're also sort of masters at the PR of being a picture taker.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like they're creating their own myth in the process.
Yeah. I don't know how much control you have over that now. I mean, I guess you could. You know, the interesting thing about people like Jay and you know, even like Gary Winogrand's another actually really good example.
Sure.
Here's a guy who, you know, has become known as one of the great photographers of the 20th century. And we're finding, or we have already found, we're not finding, but hundreds and hundreds of thousands of unexposed pictures.
Sure.
Yet to be developed.
Yep.
Just rolls of film. So
where would you even start, by the way, dealing with that nowadays?
But the point being, he wasn't looking through everything. He wasn't looking for a banger out of every roll so he could post it or share it. So I think the intent of photographers like Jay, like Gary Winogrand, like, you know, even to a degree, I'm blanking on her name now. The nanny.
Yes.
Vivian Mayer.
Yeah,
Vivian Mayer. Didn't develop her film. Didn't care about it being seen. It was for her.
Yeah, but was that partly because of what you're saying, but partly also maybe because there were no easy outlets. You couldn't just self-publish your own work
But not developing the film tells me as someone who takes pictures that you don't care about the end process. You care about the process. You don't care about the end product, rather.
Yeah, but that's kind of weird to some extent, right? Like, I like the idea of taking the picture, but I don't even want to, I don't care what the picture is.
No, because it is about the experience of it. And the latest newsletter that I'm writing is I'm writing about archives because I'm looking through my own archive and adding to it and building things for future work and all that kind of stuff. And I think I went back and I listened to, a conversation that I had with Dan Winters, and he said in this conversation that the photograph for him is just evidence of the process.
Sure.
It's evidence of the passion. It's evidence of the doing.
I totally agree with that.
That's what's important. That's what's important.
But he does finish the picture. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. But he does finish the picture. He's not just like taking the picture and then not processing. I mean, I think that in the case of those piles of Winogran negatives or just film in canisters, right?
Yeah.
I think it's just stuff that I think he was maybe just sort of a flighty guy and just never got around to those because he shot so much.
Never got around to like 300,000 images? That seems like a conscious choice. Doesn't seem like I forgot.
I think maybe it's one of those. Well, you also got to remember it costs money to process all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's like, oh, I took that. I don't think there's anything that great on that roll. Here, I'm going to process this one because there is.
Was he curating after the fact?
I'm sure maybe the idea of processing or not processing his film was step one in his editing process.
Yeah.
I mean, I always think about like Joel Meyerowitz is a similar kind of guy, right? Like he's all about he's a 70s guy who shoots a lot and walks around on the street and does that kind of thing. I mean, it's interesting when you hear about these guys in the 70s walking around taking these pictures, and there's like those pictures that Meyerowitz took on, I don't know if they're like in the Hamptons or whatever it is, like where it's like real breezy. It's like on a closed porch. I'll have to find them.
Is it the Cape May or
yeah,
something?
Maybe
Cape
that's
Light. Cape Light.
Yes.
I think it's Cape Light.
That's it.
Cape Light J. No.
Joel.
Mm.
Yeah. But some of those like have a very particular feel to them.
Cape Light. Just been reissued, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're right though. You look at some of the pictures from that series and there's like the picture of the telephone booth lit up in the middle of nowhere next to a telephone pole, like next to
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God, you kidding me? I feel like maybe you're right. About everything. You're right about everything.
I'm going to get a hat made. Jeff was right about everything.
I mean, things did look, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like we take so many pictures now that we don't really appreciate them. It's like the fact that it doesn't cost anything to take pictures devalues them. It's like email, you know? It's like if emails cost 5 cents a piece to send, it's not like you wouldn't send less emails to your friends, but spammers would stop sending out a billion emails, you know?
Okay. So, hold on. Pause. Time out. This is something I was talking to Adrian about. It was related to text messaging.
Okay. Yeah.
Back in the day.
Back in my day when I used T9.
Yes, that's the thing, right? When you use T9 texting, it was a pain. So you had to think about how you wanted to say something, if you wanted to say something, why you wanted to say something. You wouldn't just fire off two or three sentences with your thumbs because it takes, you got to go A, B, C. Okay, that's one. And then you'd inevitably hit the wrong thing. So you got to press delete and do it all over again. And it just...
Why is that better?
I don't know that it's better. But I'm saying you had to be more purposeful in what you sent because you had to expend more time, energy, and focus to make it happen.
Yeah.
Rather than just emoji, some sort of weird shorthand that I still don't understand, et cetera.
Yeah. I think that there's value in, when I went to Japan, I've told the story a million times, but when I went to Japan a million years ago, God, was it 2009, almost 17 years ago.
Wow.
Anyway, a trip to Japan, I decided just to take my Hasselblad.
Yeah.
And enough rolls.
This is your 500?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with just enough film to shoot basically one roll a day. So 12 pictures a day.
Okay.
And it ended up being a little bit of a pain because we were outside, we were inside, you know what I mean? Like if you want to shoot beautiful 100 speed slide film outside, then you go inside of a temple and there's no light, you know what I mean?
You can't just shoot at 1600 like Jay did.
Exactly. Jay. But there's something about those pictures. I go back to those pictures now. And like the pictures that I took on that trip. Now it's funny because I actually think I took more pictures on that trip than I don't really take a lot of pictures on trips anymore. I mean, I'll take some pictures with my phone, but I don't take, a ton of pictures. You know what I mean? Like my wife takes far more pictures than I do.
Yeah.
On trips. But I look at the pictures that I took on that the trip to Japan, and I'm going to send you this picture and I'll figure out some way to just stick this somewhere. I made a contact sheet. It was up on the wall for a while. It was just the contact sheet of just the pictures I took in Japan.
I don't think I've ever seen this, man.
And there's ones that are, you know, the exposure's off or the focus is off. Like, they're not perfect. And maybe out of those, I don't know, do the math, whatever, like 150 pictures or whatever it is I took over 2 weeks, whatever that works out to be, something like that. I think there are 25 in the 12x12 book that I made of them. I made a blurb book for myself and you know, it's nice that it was limited that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like I thought about each picture more. I remember each picture more. I go through and I look at those and I kind of remember taking each one of them. And that's not true.
273? Does that sound right? 273?
That many pictures? Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe I was 14 times 12. Yeah. So I took a little over a roll a day. And I did go buy more. I bought some more film there because you could buy film cheaper there. I actually had
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yep.
If you're looking at these, are you able to get any sense of quality of photograph relative to had you been traveling with your 5D? Are these photos better?
Yeah.
Because they cost money and time than they would have been had you just had been able to sort of click away and fill up a memory card with 1,000 images.
Well, I think that taking pictures with a Hasselblad 500 is just by definition a different thing. You know what I mean? Like I mean, you're looking down through a waist level viewfinder. Your camera tends to be in different positions than it would be. It's at your belly button. It's not, or at your chest, not at your head height.
I guess I'm just wondering sort of qualitatively, is that process, does that process
give you better pictures? Yes.
Better results.
I think so. Does it give you pictures that I would not have gotten otherwise? Yes. Mm-hmm. Does it give me pictures? I've tried to do this again. We went to Puerto Rico. I mean, I'm sorry. We went to Puerto Rico, a few years ago, and Puerto Rico. Did they have those ads when you were a kid? There were like these TV ads. There were these TV ads trying to get you to go to Puerto Rico. And at the end, the guy goes, and Puerto Rico. Somebody who's listening to this will know. Email us.
But I thought you were channeling your inner Lin-Manuel Miranda.
No. It was a whole thing. Anyway, I think that you don't, you just, it just feels different. And I know that, like, you know, nowadays, could I have the same pictures from my modern cameras? I'm sure the quality of my current cameras is as good or better than the film that I'm getting out of a Hasselblad most of the time. But man, there was something about just, and it was also like, you're just carrying around that one camera and a roll of film or two in your pocket.
Yeah.
No flashes, no other lenses. It was just one 80 millimeter, you know, lens on there. Just one normal lens. I don't know, man. There's just something nice about keeping contained. But I went to Puerto Rico and I brought the Leica and I shot the Leica the same way. And I did not have the same experience with the Leica. Like, I took some good pictures, but it did not feel the same to me. Like, shooting with the Hasselblad was way better.
So it's not,
film specifically.
It wasn't just film. It was the kind of film and the kind of camera.
Shooting square too is a specific thing. And I think,
and again, that idea of looking down, because I would imagine I've shot with waist level finders on a Yashica mat. And that you're looking down, then up, then down, then up, then down, then
yep.
You're constantly kind of going back and forth.
Yep.
Almost checking. I don't know what we're checking for.
But it isn't, it's almost an iterative process of improving the picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In a weird way.
Interesting.
And, you know, my experience of being there and doing that, it's also the weird thing. And I was talking to Matt Carr about this a couple weeks ago because he was trashing a bunch of old negatives and stuff he didn't care about anymore. And I was like, yeah, but that negative was there when you took that picture.
Yeah.
Like it's an artifact of being there in the way that
artifact of time and place, yeah. Man. Yes.
Yeah. It's like that piece of plastic was with you in 2009 in Japan.
Yeah.
And was in the same place when you took that thing. Like you exposed that piece of plastic to light in Japan and it still has that image on it now because of that.
Yeah.
Which I just, man, there's just something about that. It's something different. I don't know. It's a thing, but yeah, I mean, it's cool. And yet I don't do it that often,
mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, yeah, that's funny. I actually found, when I was leaving for Japan, I took a picture of the gear that I was bringing to Japan. I must have written a post about it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally was the camera, a light meter, and you know, 10 rolls of film.
There it is. I wonder, okay, if you had shot with maybe, what was it? The F and the F2 both had what Nikon called their sports finders or their action, something like that.
Oh, where you can look down kind of thing?
Yeah, you were looking down. I mean, it's obviously you don't have the same large ground glass. It's a smaller thing. But I wonder if that act of the way you hold the camera, the way you look through the camera, instead of it being a viewfinder at your face, it's, as you said, it's you're looking down at your chest or your belly and sort of looking up, looking down, looking up, looking down. I wonder if that sort of almost second guessing your composition in real time.
Yeah.
How you're almost comparing your composition to the real world because you're looking down, up, down, up, down, up. I wonder if that contributes or how it contributes.
It could be. I think for me, I think a lot of it is the square and the size of the negative. Like there's just something about where you know you're exposing this giant thing. Like it feels different when you're doing it. Shooting medium format versus shooting 35. I don't shoot 35 millimeter film very often. I don't find it very satisfying. I'll shoot medium format film still. I'll shoot big film sometimes. But, you know, it's...
look at that. That's cool.
Yeah, this is a picture of my friend Jonathan and my wife and I, like, in Japan. And, like, you know, even there, wait, like...
Didn't Jonathan... I met Jonathan somewhere.
Did you meet Jonathan somewhere?
Jonathan Gorman.
Oh, you right? did. Yes, yes. When you were in L.A. still, I was visiting him when we were
Jonathan
there.
Jonathan Gorman. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
How funny. Look at that.
You know, him
another deep cut.
And look at it, you know, and I can see that he has a little ice cream thing in his hand from McDonald's, you know, like, and I remember him getting a little treat, you know, because it was like 89 yen or whatever the hell it was, you know, some ridiculously cheap thing.
Right.
And
9 cents.
Yeah. And I don't know, man, like I like the idea that there is, I don't know. I like the idea that there is a record that is limited.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was up at my mother's house last week. And at one point, my sister was there, my mother's there, my niece was there. And we pulled out pictures,
mm-hmm.
Childhood pictures. And we're going through a bunch of pictures because we were like, oh, we haven't gone with these in a while. And I took some to bring home. And you know, my mother has since gone through them and organized them and categorized them since we left. Could give, you right. know, something. And it's like, you know, there aren't that many pictures of me as a kid.
Hmm.
There's probably, what, a couple hundred?
You know what I mean? That's more than I've got of me. Yeah.
You know, I'm talking about like
a few dozen.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Yeah. Maybe it's less. It's certainly not in the thousands. You know, it's certainly not where I have thousands of pictures of some of my friends that I've been hanging out with the past few years, just because we've walking around. Yeah, I take a picture. Oh, here you are sitting eating your clam roll or whatever. You know what I mean? Like it's
what the hell is a clam roll?
It's a thing.
Is that really a thing?
Yeah. Yeah. clam
like roasted. A lobster roll, but clam?
Yeah, with fried clams in it.
I've never heard of
it. I don't eat them. We used to get them for school. They used to serve clam rolls would be one of our like lunch options.
So that was the East Coast version of fish sticks?
Well, then we had fish sticks too. Anyway, yeah. But I have, you know, I have more pictures of some of my friends than I do of me as a kid.
Wow.
Just because we have cameras on our phones all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not to say
I mean, the camera, it came out and then got put away. You didn't.
Exactly. And it was only out for
a camera all the time.
It was out for holidays. It was out for whatever.
It was a marker. This is important enough to take a picture of.
And that's the thing about people like Jay and Joel Meyerowitz and all these guys is that they were walking around with a camera in 1970.
Yeah.
You know, that's what makes them different, which is why they have these pictures of these things that we don't have. And Saul and, you know, Vivian Mayer and all these people that we're talking about. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have those apps on phones now where, oh, it'll only take one picture a day. You know what I mean? You take the pictures and you don't see them for a week.
Yeah, you don't see them for a week. Yeah,
whatever all these different things are. And those sort of artificial constraints feel different to me. You know what I mean?
It is different. It is different. And in my perspective, it's different because the odds of that photo not turning out are virtually zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas I have screwed up so many rolls of film, either in the exposure process, taking the picture, or in the developing process. I got the temperature wrong. I didn't agitate enough.
Yeah.
There were bubbles attached to the negative because I didn't, you know, I didn't kind of.
I mean, let's be fair. How many rolls have you actually had come out in any way, shape, or form?
Come on now. I had a lot.
Did you used to do a lot of that.
Bulk roll. Yeah. And buy 100-foot rolls and load her on.
How much does it cost for a bulk roll of Tri-X? Oh,
plus
now.
X or something? Yeah. I don't know.
I'll look up. 100-foot
roll Tri-X. 100-foot roll of Tri-X.
$211.
Holy cow. Yeah. It was maybe. $30, $20. I don't know
But how many rolls do you get out of a 100-foot bulk roll?
I don't know. What is it? A 36 exposure roll is maybe what?
Foot and a half?
Three and a half feet.
Is it that long? Go ahead. Keep talking. I'll figure it out.
But, you know, there were so many things that could go wrong. And that was just black and white. You know, when I started doing color, I didn't shoot color very often at all because I kept screwing it up.
Right.
It just didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. And then you got to dial in color on the color heads on the enlarger and try and get it. It's more temperature sensitive. It's more. Bleh. No, no.
The answer is 18 to 20 rolls of 36 exposure.
20 rolls of 36 exposures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
But you're still, I mean, man, it adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you get about 750 frames out of that.
So it's a third of a modern wedding.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, right? Like, I never shoot a lot. If every once in a while, I'll do some, shoot for somebody for money, and I'll overshoot it just because these people are there. There's wardrobe involved. You know what I mean? Like it's better to have too much than too little.
Well, and because you can.
And because
you know,
I can.
To your point about going to Japan, you know, you have to make a decision. When you blast through those 15 rolls of film, you're at a crossroads. Am I done for the trip or do I go buy more film?
Yep. But also, you know, it's weird. It's a weird double thing, right? Both taking pictures on film on a trip, say, makes you think about pictures more, but it also makes you think about pictures less because you know you don't have that much time to take them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to be thinking about taking pictures all the time because I don't need to take a picture. I only want to take the good ones as much as possible. You know what I mean? Like, a picture.
I haven't gotten to that phase yet.
I could take a picture of that sand dune at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but you know what? It's not going to look good at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. If I wait until 6:30, it's going to look better.
So I'll wait till 6:30.
But I'm not going to be here at 6:30. Then what do you do? Do you have it? Do you take the less perfect photo just so you have a record of it?
When I was younger, maybe yes. As an older person, absolutely not.
You just wouldn't bother.
No. I mean, there's a lot of times I don't bother. You know, it's like that scene in Walter Mitty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I just look.
Yeah.
One of the great scenes in that movie. And I love that movie.
I love that movie.
I'm not a huge Ben Stiller fan, but that is probably my favorite Ben Stiller movie.
It's a good movie. If anybody hasn't seen it, you should watch the movie. But there's a scene with Sean Penn as this photographer up in the mountains looking at a snow leopard or something.
Yeah.
And
Sean O'Connor.
Yeah.
Or O'Connell. O'Connell? O'Connor.
O'Connor.
Is it O'Connor or O'Connell?
I think it's Connor. Look it up. And he's about to take the picture of the snow leopard that he's been waiting for that finally came out from behind the rocks. And he doesn't take it. And Ben Stiller's character says, you know, are you going to take the picture? And he goes, no. Yeah. Sometimes
I don't.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
But I mean, isn't that us as photographers just fetishizing the whole thing? You better take the picture. By saying not take the picture, it turns it in almost like a sexual act, right? It's like I'm going to like purposefully deny myself.
I don't know. I mean, I can.
The same thing true of the not processing the film later, right? Like it turns it into. Are we turning it into a philosophical thing more than a physical thing? And even if we are, is that okay?
I mean, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I can see the point of not everything has to be captured and documented. But, man, I don't know. That's a really good question. I think we need to unpack that.
I mean, to me, I just know that I have X thousands of pictures on my hard drive.
And it is O'Connell, by the way. With two L's.
I think that I have, you know, thousands and tens of thousands, hundred thousands of pictures on my hard drive. I'm of two minds about this. One, there's lots of pictures on there I either don't think that I need or didn't need to take, or certainly don't need to keep now. A lot of client stuff, right? Like, you know, so do I need to keep the one-star things from a client who chose the five selects from the three-star bin? Why am I keeping the one-star stuff? Because 10 years from now, they might call me up and say, do you have one where the button on my shirt is turned a little bit more to the left? Like, no, that's never going to happen, right?
Yeah.
But I don't, mostly it's just the time and energy of going through all that. Maybe that's something AI can do for me one day. But
maybe, although maybe there is something deeper there, Bill. Maybe there is something that noticed it, you took it,
yeah.
It has value, you should keep it.
Well, the flip side of that is that did I need to keep a picture of soap from Jay's house?
No, but I'm certainly glad you did.
Right. See, this is the flip side of all of that.
I mean, you could just as easily have looked at that and gone,
yep.
I don't need this.
Yep. I kept all the pictures from that day. I mean, I didn't shoot that much. I'm not a prolific shooter. The entire time I was at Jay's house, I took.
Yeah. I bet you did.
71 pictures.
Okay.
Nothing.
And I'm not blowing smoke. I love that photograph. I really do. It's a beautiful photograph.
Yeah. This is,
it's not doing it for the show. I would hang that photograph. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But like
there is something about it. And yeah. Good job.
Anyway, it's a weird thing. What was I shooting on? 35 millimeter F3.2. So that was the 35 1.4L. That's a nice lens.
On your 5D?
Yeah, this would be a 5D2 maybe at the time. Let's see. Let's go to the digital tape.
Let's go to the board.
How do I get to the camera model? Here we go. 5D Mark II.
Yeah, cool.
It's, although I will tell you, there's other pictures in this set where I blew out the highlights a little bit, or it was a little too dark and I tried to open it up a little bit and I go, wow, there's just no room in these negatives. Like in these, like compared to my quote unquote modern cameras, and one of my modern cameras is only 5 years newer than this. Like unbelievable amounts of dynamic range that I did not have back then.
I don't know if you did this intentionally. You probably did, but I don't know. The way you framed this with the plumbing pipe on the left side and the edge of the sink on the right, rather than just tightening in on the cornice molding. Those two little details tell us, A, where this is, and they give us some detail into the type of structure. This is an old structure because you've got piping outside the walls. This is a, you know, there's a marble sink. You can see the seams. So it invites us to look and imagine what kind of environment this is. And I just think it's a terrific picture.
Thank you. Interestingly enough, I lied. I did not keep all the pictures. I took 187 and I have 70 something of them, 73 of them.
Wait, how do you know that you took 187 if you only have 73?
Because I can see that it's J. Maisel 110208 dash, and it goes from 00 to 187. And like the picture of the soap is 146. The one before is 143. And the one after it's 147.
Interesting. So you did delete.
I did delete.
Is there any chance that you still have these on a different drive in a different archive?
Maybe, but probably not. This is interesting because this was 2011. I was doing another daily series, but they weren't all portraits. I had to post a picture each day.
Yeah.
So I was taking pictures of different things each day. I was, you know, sometimes they were people.
If you zoom in on this, you can even see the dust bunnies.
I know. I noticed the dust bunnies on the thing.
Of soap. Oh, it's so good. Shut up with this.
I'll find the thing and I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
Just for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't know, man. Like, I go back and forth on all this stuff. I really do.
I know. It's hard to know as photography becomes so easy, so ubiquitous, so unimportant, quote unquote.
Yeah.
It's hard to know, or it's hard to ascribe value in a medium that has become, in many ways, valueless.
Yes. And I sometimes wonder how much it means. I go back and forth on how much it means to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what it means to the world is a larger question. What it means to me, and does the devaluing of it in society devalue how it feels to me? Because if society doesn't care, is my caring just sort of a navel-gazy? You know, yeah, what I mean?
Or is it a Sisyphus thing where you're just pushing the boulder,
yeah,
but
sure,
that acceptance isn't going to come because it's what anybody can do it now.
But what is that acceptance? What am I looking for? Is that acceptance of my own, or is that acceptance of other people?
I don't know. I think Jay, you know, to sort of come
back around,
or,
yeah,
I think Jay shows that the value is in the noticing.
Yeah.
That observation is a skill, that noticing has value and it has merit and it has importance. You know, a lot of Jay's pictures are staged. A lot of Jay's pictures are, you know, setups and that kind of thing. But I would argue that maybe even a lot more of Jay's are just noticing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
and,
I think it is.
You know, the same with Meyerowitz, the same with Stephen Shore, the same with, you know, you're not. I don't know, man. This whole thing about, like, I made the photo, I didn't take the photo. Like, I'm so tired of that because I think it devalues observation as a skill.
Sure. Yep.
I think it devalues noticing as a form of expression.
Yeah. I think you're right. I don't think of myself as an observational photographer that way.
I've seen enough of your work to beg to differ with you on that.
Yeah, but I guess I don't walk around and see something and go, oh, I wish I had my camera. I wish I had to take a picture of that thing.
Well, but that's a question of consistency or quantity, not the quality of noticing.
Yeah, I guess I'm noticing, but I don't think the noticing and the being a photographer are connected in my brain.
Okay, so you're Sean O'Connell.
Yeah, Yeah. It's funny.
The fact that you didn't photograph it doesn't mean that you didn't notice it.
Yeah, but I honestly don't think of, I don't think of myself as a very good noticer. I see other people's stuff and I think, oh man, I never even would have thought to look at that.
Interesting.
I'm not an observer in that way. I don't even notice when somebody's tie is upside down in a picture I'm taking of them half the time. I'm worried about their face. I'm worried about
their eyes.
I'm not worried about,
oh, there's hair on the collar or a button is,
oh,
missing.
I'm terrible about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, to my detriment, I'm terrible about that stuff. But maybe, you know, I'm just a different kind of photographer. You know what I mean? Like, it's not my thing. That's somebody else's thing, you know?
But I'd come back around to this again, Bill, and say that you are a noticer in the sense that even if you don't capture it, you recognize and notice when other people do. So there is still a sensitivity to it. There is still a sensibility about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if you don't yourself, even if that's not how you express, you still notice it and you are still able to look at a photograph and go, man, I wish I could have done that. I can understand that there's something special here.
Yeah.
I understand that there is something worth observing, noticing, capturing, et cetera.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
And I think if you were not a noticer or an observer,
I appreciate
then those
noticing.
Would just fly by.
Sure. I appreciate noticing, but it's funny. It's like, I don't mind if things just sort of, pass by in the Sean O'Connell way.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the, oh yeah, yep, there it goes. That's okay. We had a big conversation at the house the other day, just about, you know, what do you keep from people's things? You know, when people die, like the things you keep and the things you get rid of and pictures and paintings on walls and pieces of furniture. And, you know, I am much more of a looking forward than looking backwards kind of person as a general rule.
Yeah.
And my sister feels like looking backwards is a big part of looking forwards, you know, that that they're all connected. I feel like if you look back too much, you might get stuck there.
I can see that, but I tend to err on the same side as your sister, because I think looking back, don't get stuck there. But I think looking back, you also see, like, let's say, you know, your father.
Yeah.
Looking back through his things.
I've heard of him.
It's a reminder. It's a record of what he noticed, of what he thought was important, of what he thought was good taste, bad taste, whatever it may be. So I think there's a value in looking back. But again, I think you have to temper it with not getting stuck there. And I have, you know, I think we both have gone through periods where it was hard to shake the nostalgia, or it was hard to shake the memory of our past relatives.
Sure.
And you get stuck there because there is comfort in that.
I think, you know, even more so, I think that, you know, you look back at somebody and the way they saw the world at an earlier time, or you see a picture 100%. Of some relative of yours.
Yeah.
And you feel like, I need to take more time, because, like, they, to your earlier point, they noticed things in the moment that this picture was being taken. They were having an experience when this picture was being taken.
Yeah.
And if I don't look at it, I'm totally negating it. If I don't look at it long enough and try to put myself in their place to understand who they were at that time, I'm also negating it. But if you do too much of that, then you end up not living your own life, right? You're living other people's lives.
Yeah, you're living it through their memory, or you're living it through their, what you think that their vision of your life
and
should
who
be.
Knows what they were thinking at that moment. Like, we all have these, we imagine what we think they were thinking, but who the hell knows? You know what I mean? Obviously, a lot of that is in our own imagination. It's funny, in these pictures that I, when I was taking pictures of, Jay in that 2011, I guess it was, I was taking pictures of a lot of people each day, and I was like trying to find something in here as we're talking.
Is that the portrait 2011? Is that when you did that one?
I didn't do 2007 was the original portrait one. 2011, I was just doing these daily things, but there were a lot of portraits in there, and I'm looking through them and I'm like, man, there's a lot of pictures in here that I totally forgot about. Like just totally forgot about. I used to experiment more. You know, I used to see things more, God, I don't know how I put this. I used to see things more freely.
Okay. Can we come back to that on a fresh, fresh take?
Is that an interesting idea?
Yes. 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 Yes.
I think it's just maybe an age thing. I don't know.
I think there's more to it than that.
Okay.
Yeah, next time, kids.
Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting looking at old stuff sometimes.
Yeah. Especially when you know, like in the case of these photos that you've shown here today, in some ways they're new again because you'd forgotten about them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm looking through and I'm like, oh, that was kind of cool. Look at that picture.
So this event that's somewhat sad, there's also a rediscovery there, you know, and I think that speaks to the power of an archive. And I think that speaks to the importance of an archive that, you know, one of the things that I wrote in this piece was we tend to think that an archive is a place that things go when we're done with them.
You know, interesting. Yeah.
A cold storage collection of what used to matter. But maybe it's where I wrote in this. Let me bring this up because I think it's interesting. I've always thought of archives as places where things go when they're finished, sort of a record of the past or a cold storage collection of what mattered after the fact. But lately I've started to think of an archive differently. Maybe it isn't just a repository for things that stop being useful. Maybe it's also where they start asking new questions.
Oh, interesting. That is interesting.
So, I don't know. But I am enjoying kind of going through it. And I think this was a good example of that. I think this is a thank you for this, because I think it kind of reinforced some of the things I've already been thinking about, and it's kind of taking me in a different direction to think about them moving forward.
I also need a 45 millimeter. I need a 35 millimeter equivalent lens for my Pentax. I like that focal length.
So go buy one.
Yeah, they make a 45. I have actually a 45 to 85 zoom. I'll just use that for a while and play with it. It's funny, there man. Go. There's a lot of pictures in here that aren't bad. They ain't bad, Wadman.
Almost like you know what you're doing.
It's almost like you know what you're doing. You ever feel like you know what you're doing?
Rarely.
Yeah, me too.
Increasingly rarely.
I bumped into a photographer, Nina Lean. Do you know Nina Lean? N-I-N-A, last name L-E-E-N.
Nina Lean.
She apparently American photographer, but she was born in the Russian Empire in 1914.
Oh, she got a big thing on the Life magazine. Interesting. Oh, the photos don't come up. Come on, Life. Get your stuff together.
Crying yeah, they're coming up. If I click on them.
Are they?
Did you click on the gallery?
I'm just at the... No, it's broken images.
Oh, I'm seeing dogs. I'm seeing dogs and stuff.
I'm seeing dogs and space. I don't even know what's going on.
Wait, is this the thing you're looking at here? Let me send you the thing. But yeah, black and white photographer, Life magazine.
Yeah, the images don't come up.
Oh, interesting. They come up for me. That's really weird.
That's all right. I'm doing an image search.
Yeah, doing an image search. Beautiful work. A lot of sort of fashion stuff, some street stuff, some color, a lot of black and white.
Yeah, look at that. Is that, who is that? Who is that one picture? It's not Catherine Hepburn. What's her name?
This picture at this party is the one that gets me. I'm going to probably use this for the thing. Look at this picture of these kids at this party. And obviously it's staged. And look at all those bottles of Coca-Cola on the plate, on the table.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
But isn't that nice?
That's great.
That's a great picture.
Drinking Coke, eating donuts.
donuts and chips.
It's just all about the sugar rush of adolescence right there.
Listen,
yeah, chips, Coke, and
life
donuts.
Is about the sugar rush of adolescence. anyway, she was, here, let me pull this up again. Excuse me. Died in 1995. So she was alive for what, 80 years. She studied painting in Berlin. She emigrated to the United States in 1939. She lived in Italy and Switzerland before that. And she started getting published, published pictures of tortoises at the Bronx Zoo, taken with a Rolleiflex in April of 1940. While she never became a staff photographer at Life, probably because she was a woman at the time, she contributed as a contracting photographer until the magazine closed in 1972. Lean was a prolific photographer for Fashion for Life, was married to longtime fashion photographer Serge Balkan. She was recognized inclusion by Edward Steichen of two of her photographs in The Family of Man, which if you guys don't know about The Family of Man, Steichen did a series that traveled around the world. He chose 503 photographs from 68 different countries to sort of say, these are people in the world, in the 1950s.
So there's a terrific book of it, too.
Yeah. So the fact, and it traveled around, it's like a real seminal sort of set of things. In fact, the collection is a UNESCO Memory of the World Register, recognition of its historical value. Anyway.
Boy, this is beautiful work.
But her stuff is really great. One of a child and of a child at a blackboard, the other several generations of Ozark family farming, later selected by Carl Sagan for the 12-inch Voyager record. So her pictures are outside the Helios paws right now.
Wow.
Where are your pictures, Jeffrey?
In a box under my side of the bed.
It's like, do you remember that episode of The West Wing? You were a West Wing watcher, right?
I just watched another episode where Josh meets with Adam Arkin after the shooting.
Oh, classic. That's like one of the best ones.
It's so great.
Yeah. You're not talking to the paperboy either or whatever.
Oh, so good.
But the one where he's talking to the NASA people and the girl with the woman from NASA with the telescope takes him out into the field. It's season five or six. And he comes back and he's talking to Donna and he's talking about Blind Willie Johnson's music and all the rest of it. And that, you know, he ended up dying penniless, cold and froze in his own like filth underneath cardboard or whatever on the street, the guy. But his music, recorded music, is on the way out of the solar system on the Voyager record. Like,
yeah,
he died here, but his music is out there.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so this woman, totally, she was behind 50 magazine covers, countless reports from around the world, story of her dog Lucky, which began in 1949 and later led to a book. In addition to many animal stories, she's remembered for covering young people in the 40s and 50s, a group of artists known as the Irascibles. She's documented European royalty, fashion models, dance, actresses. From 1973, Lean avidly continued to publish her work in book form, including notable images of bats, which she called her flying kittens. Creepy.
Weird. Okay.
Also, in the Wikipedia article, this is so great. There's a See Also section, and the See Also section links us to a Wikipedia entry of Tommy Tucker the Squirrel. Which was a male Eastern gray squirrel who became a celebrity in the United States, touring the country wearing women's fashions while performing tricks, entertaining children, and selling war bonds. Tommy Tucker the Squirrel. Yeah, I said it. Tommy Tucker the Squirrel. She must have taken pictures of Tommy Tucker. Featured in Life magazine, complete with a gallery of photos by Nina Lean.
That is funny.
Yeah, that is really funny. I'll put a link to her.
I shoot Wikipedia. Models, reportage, and rodents.
Yeah. In that order.
In that order. That's right. Sure, these are good, but have you seen my Tommy Tucker the Squirrel shots?
Go check out Nina Lean.
Nina Lean, great choice. Yeah. Great choice.
Got anything else?
I think that'll do it.
Okay. We will meet up in a couple weeks and apparently discuss seeing things more freely.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yes, tune in for that.
Okay. Right. Jeffrey, have a good day.
Yep, you too.
We'll talk to you soon.
See you.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you want. this way.